What has life been like for you for the last couple of weeks?
Well, good morning, gentlemen, and thanks for having me. Life for me has probably been very similar to everybody else. It's been a bit of a shock initially. I, like many, wasn't prepared for the dynamic of this virus and its impact. I knew it was out there and knew it could affect us, but certainly not to this level. So it's been a shock. Shock kind of turned into reality. And from that time on, it's been a whirlwind of emotions. We're obviously all disappointed we're not playing, but also from a health perspective, I have older parents. My wife has older parents. We're certainly concerned about their health as well as everybody else in the Kings world, but also the hockey world and everywhere else. So it's been an interesting few weeks, to say the least.
I'm going to turn this over to Brian here in a couple of seconds, Todd. But before we get there, because Brian really enjoys talking about people's biographies and how they got to where they are right now, I want to ask you one quick question about the Los Angeles Kings. From the beginning of this season to the end of this season, this is a completely different team. And I don't buy the empty calorie game argument. All these games don't mean anything. So, you know, the team, of course, is going to start to pile up some wins. The one thing that we saw from your team throughout the season is this team worked harder and harder as the season went on. LA became one of the tougher outs in the NHL. What happened?
Well, I think it goes all the way back to the summer. And prior to the transition of the team, coaching staff, changes in player personnel, last year set up this year. I think last year was a very disappointing season in many fronts. You know, obviously me coming in later, I did my homework and found that players were really personally disappointed, collectively disappointed in the season that they had. Which certainly set us up for a path in the right direction. It's a proud group of players, players that have won in the past, and they didn't want that mark on their reputation. So they were prepared to go right off the bat. The turnover in structure and systematic play, I think, was refreshing for the players. It was something new, and it excited an older player base, if you will, and the young players were coming in that were and are coming in. Are very receptive to it. What it did was take a large chunk of our season, though, to perfect it or at least get it to where it was effective. We struggled initially. We grew as the season went on. We had a real tough spell of scheduling, playing an immense number of road games compared to home games in the middle of the season. And by the time we went on this winning streak, we settled in at home. Players were confident. The trade deadline had passed. And the structure itself and the belief system in each other and the coaching staff, I think, improved as the year went on. And thus we were able to push some teams to tough nights. And it's something we're proud of. It's something that we want to hold on to. And we also have to improve, though, in many different areas. But at least we have a foundation right now.
Berkey?
Hey, Mac. Thanks for joining us there. And Jeff said I am interested in how people got to where they got to, but I find I'm getting lots of texts and emails from people that are really enjoying listening to the coaches walk them through their progression. So we're going to ask you to take us through. So your playing career first, tell us about your life as a player in five NHL games, which is five more than I got.
Well, my my path is probably not a lot different than a lot of players. I was a major junior player in Saskatoon, the Western Hockey League. I was from Saskatoon, so I got to live and play at home, which was a unique experience. Drafted by the Islanders in the mid-rounds and turned pro. Turned pro for a very short period, about 2.5 years. Had many shoulder problems, 3 surgeries. And there was a day that I sat down with the Islanders doctors after the third one, and I couldn't play anymore. And they said, you might want to think about doing something different. And any young hockey player that's been told that, it's very emotional. It's all I ever knew. Kind of ripped my heart out, and away I went. I went back to Saskatoon, was lost. I didn't know what I was going to do. Rehabbed for about a full year and decided I wanted to play again. And my NHL dreams were certainly gone. After sitting out a year, I ended up going over to Europe and played in the Netherlands, which is a league at that time, which was a little bit stronger, but certainly doesn't exist anymore. My time there was exciting. It rekindled my passion for playing. We won a championship. I met a tremendous man named Doug McKay, who happened to spend some time in the NHL. He was our coach, and he got me into the coaching bug. Came back that summer, back to Canada, as all North American players do, and had a contract to go back to Europe, but realized it was probably a path that wasn't taking me anywhere. So I was thinking of a number of different paths to go on. My father is in the RCMP in Canada, and I thought about that for a while, but I passed on that. And lo and behold, one day I opened up a newspaper, the Saskatoon Star Phoenix, and there was an ad in the paper for a coaching position in the Saskatchewan Junior League, North Battleford North Stars. And I know that I had that itch because of my European time. I answered the ad, sent a resume off, got an interview. About 2 weeks later, I was awarded the job. 24 years old, going to coach players that are 18, 19, 20 at that time, and had really no idea what I was doing. So I remember getting the job. I came back home and looked at my fiance at that time, wife now, and I said, Debbie, I got the job, and I have no idea what I'm doing. So that's how my coaching career began.
And what did that job pay, Mac?
That job paid, and I'm certainly not going to diminish the value because it is still a lot of money, but $20,000 a year. We rented an apartment in North Battleford. I think we paid $350 a month, and neither of us knew how we were going to survive. It was a bit of a jolt, it was exactly what I needed as an individual. I needed an opportunity. I needed somewhere where I could learn my trade. I needed a community that was going to support me, not only a hockey community, but a community that was passionate about the game, that had a good board of directors. And I got all of that as a very young coach. So I'm so thankful that I got that opportunity for 2 years in North Battleford. It really set me up, and it allowed me to gain true passion for the coaching profession, and from there it just went on.
So you were fortunate to live and work in Saskatchewan until you were 26.
I did do that. I spent some time in the minors in Springfield, a little bit in with the Islanders. I think Travis Green is coming on with you later on. He was a campmate of mine, but not a teammate. My time in the minors, Bruce Boudreau was a roommate on the road. So it's amazing how our hockey world stays together. Following North Battleford, I was hired in Swift Current, I think at the age of 26. And that was in the Western Hockey League. I don't think that happens too often anymore where inexperienced 26-year-olds get major junior jobs. That's just how valuable they are right now. But I got that opportunity at a real young age and spent 6 years there. Learned a lot about managing, about coaching. I was the coach and general manager for 4 years there. Dealt with a lot of unordinary things. I'm referring to the Graham James abuse scandal. I followed Graham into Swift Current and had to deal with that for a number of years, investigations and interviews, parents, recruiting. It was a real unique time. Something that I'm not happy I had to do, but it also allowed me to earn or to gain a lot of skills that maybe I use now. So it was a unique experience. Following that, Doug Risebrough hired me to become the Minnesota Wild's farm team coach in 2000. They were an expansion team. I spent 5 years in their organization, off to Detroit as an assistant coach for three, and from that time on, after winning a championship there, I've spent the last, I don't know what it is, 15 years, 12, 15 years as a head coach now in the National League. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity that I've got. I'm living a dream every day.
So where was your first head job? I mean, obviously I know, but for people listening,
when I left Detroit, my first head coaching job was in San Jose. Doug Wilson took a chance, and I'm grateful for that as well, on a very young, inexperienced coach with a pretty experienced team, a real good team that was on the brink of potential success. Spent 7 years there. We had some really good years, but it was time after 7 years to find a new classroom. Coach, player, management, everybody, I think, agreed on that. And went to Edmonton for 3.5 years, and now we're not quite complete our first year here in LA. We're hoping to finish it at some point, but this is where my feet are for now, and I hope to coach for a long, long time.
Take us back to San Jose. What was it like coaching Jumbo?
Well, it's interesting you ask about him, because I read your read an article today how you tried to acquire him. I'm certainly glad that you didn't get him, because Jumbo was excellent, and all we needed to do was have Jumbo with Pronger and Niedermeyer, and no one would have had a chance. So I'm glad that he came to Northern California instead of Southern. But Jumbo's an outstanding individual. He may be the most passionate guy about the game that I've been around. Loves the rink. Loves being around the team. You can't keep him off the ice. There were days where, you know, he looked a little bit tired, and, hey, Jumbo, why don't you take a day off? Not a chance. He said, that's not how we do it. You know, an incredible playmaker, competitive individual. You know, it sounds like I'm giving him the Hall of Fame speech, and that I am. He belongs there. He's going to be there, and it was just an honor to be around him for the number of years that I got to be there.
We didn't have to ask Chris Pronger twice about a day off. He'd grab it.
No, he took it all the time.
He'd grab it and run.
Yeah, I bet he did, but when it was time to play, though, he gave you everything he had.
Stewie.
Todd, you... you mentioned you played with Bruce Boudreau 2 years in Springfield. At the time, did you know that he would be a coach? Did you have a sense that he had a chance to be a coach? And also, any other players that you're coaching now, could you see them getting into coaching when they're done playing?
Well, the Gabby question, Bruce Boudreau, yes, I could see him being a coach. He was a little bit different. And in a good way, he understood the game a little better than the rest of us. We just ran around and chased the puck and hit people and block shots. Gabby fought the game. He was certainly a fair number of years older than us at the time, but he fought the game. He thought things through. He had little tips or pointers. I played with him on a line sometimes, and he'd say, well, go to this situation and show me your stick here. I would have never thought about that as a 20 or 21-year-old. So I could see him becoming a coach. He was a fun guy to be around. He was an entertainer. He told us stories that were relative to hockey and his progression up the chain, if you will. So certainly I could see him doing that. As far as other players becoming coaches, yes. You know, there are a number of them already. Individuals that I coached in Major Junior and Junior, they're coaching junior teams now. I keep in touch with them all the time. Pro players, Manny Malhotra was a tremendous player for us in San Jose. He's now one of the on the coaching staff in Vancouver, and I can see him progressing. Individuals right now that are coaching some of the best minds and some of the potential best coaches are so well compensated now as elite players that when I think they're done, they probably won't coach. It's such a major commitment time-wise and energy-wise, and your compensation, while we're very well paid, isn't anywhere near what these elite players are getting. But I could see a number of them using their hockey sense and their brilliance and sharing it with others. The biggest thing that they would probably have to learn is how to transfer that that information, that instinct that they have to a group full of players at a different level. And that would be the biggest change I could see the superstars having.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that the issue is when I talk to my players, you know, I'm 2 years out of the dressing room, I guess, but when I talk to my players about staying in the game, they would express interest, and I'd say, well, do you want to be a GM or a coach? And they're like, well, what's the difference? I said, well, there's a huge difference. The coaching is every day, and it consumes you, but you truly do get an off season, whereas a GM never does. But a lot of guys, when you explain how much work it's involved, and they're like, well, I got $30 million in the bank. It bothers me that some of our good players might not stay in the game because they've got too much money in the bank, because I think we can use those guys. I like Mark Giordano, who I had in Calgary. I think he'd be an excellent coach. Gabriel Landeskog in Colorado, just from talking to him, I think he'd be a GM the day he retires. The question is whether they'll stay in the game because they don't need the money.
Well, I think you're dead on, and it's unfortunate that's the case, but they've also given up, in their minds, they've given up a large chunk of their life, their family life. A lot of these players have young children that are growing and attending school and playing soccer and baseball and doing the things that they do all year. And these hockey players are on the road for extended periods. I'm sure once they feel comfortable in life as far as finances go, they say, you know what, it's time for me to give back at home as well. And I think they probably get that tug a little bit, and it's understandable. But maybe we should find, our game should find a way to keep these guys involved somehow. Although I will say, beware of the part-time employee, the one that isn't all in. I think to be successful, you have to have your heart into it. You have to be emotionally attached to the team. You have to feel the wins and losses full-time. You can't be a temporary or a guy that may just dabble in it to have any type of success.
No, absolutely. It's like I remember I had a player in Anaheim who was, I'm not going to name his name, good guy, but he retired with an injury. And I said to him, I said, you don't love this game enough. Like, you're not committed enough. I said, I think you play hockey because you get to date better looking women. I don't think it has anything to do with the love of the game. And some guy that loves this game will always beat you. Will always go past you, will always surpass you and bury you. It's the same with coaching. If you're not in 100%, then some guy that is in 100% is going to beat you.
Well, one of the big tests that I have, Berkey, is will you and are you prepared to move your family, to uproot your life, to pursue this career? Or is it just convenient? You use Anaheim, for example, Vancouver, Calgary, all the places, great places you've been. When that individual sits down with you, looks you in the eye and says, I want to continue in the game, the first question I would ask him is, great, but are you prepared to move to Buffalo to do it? And I think a lot of times you're going to get the answer, well, no. And immediately I get the sense that it's more convenience. You know what? I'm here. I know the community. I'm living here. I'll come to work every day and I'll give you what I have, but I'm not moving. I think if an individual answered yes, you'd get an idea that he's much more committed than some others.
With Todd McClellan, head coach of the Los Angeles Kings, just a couple more quick ones here for you, Todd. Have you ever coached anyone like Drew Doughty before?
Yes, I have. I think that some of these outstanding Norris Trophy, Hart Trophy type athletes have those qualities. They and when I say those qualities, they're free spirits. They speak their mind. They're entertaining in the locker room. The hockey world wants to hear from them. Brent Burns was that way. He was outspoken. He was full of life and energy. And Drew Doughty is that way. So I think there's some really players, and maybe that's why they're so incredibly talented. They put themselves out there. They're willing to be creative. There's other players that maybe have that in them, but they're a lot more reserved. But I have had that experience with a few others.
And one final thing, and we like to go, Brian talked to you a lot about, your coaching career and how you got to be a head coach in the NHL. I'm curious about one specific season where you played with the Saskatoon Blades. You played 4 years there in the Western Hockey League. There was one year where, and I've always liked this about the Blades, always had a tough team. There was one season where you had on your team Kevin Kaminsky, Kelly Chase, Tony Twist, and Carey Clark. Did every game take 4 hours, Todd?
Well, the best way that I can answer that is a few years after that, that team or teams in the Western Hockey League, and many of them were loaded like that with truculence, as Berkey would say. There was no shortage of truculence and intimidation in the league, but a few years after that occurred, the Western Hockey League, and in fact Major Junior Hockey, I think across Canada, went to separate warm-ups. So one team would go out and warm up before the other team came out, and then the second team came out and finished their warm-up, just so the intimidation factor, the pregame battles didn't exist. But yeah, that was a very tough team. That was a very close team. I think Sean Van Allen and I were the two leading scorers on that team, but we had no shortage of toughness. Nobody ever played scared on that team.
No, I think that separate warm-up started because of you guys and the New Westminster team.
Well, they were very tough, too. Bob Strum always had toughness in Regina, Terry Simpson in Prince Albert. There was never a night off, Berkey, and I think you know what I'm talking about, where you could go in and just breathe easy in the Western Hockey League at that time. And certainly it was probably too far one way. I'm glad that it's been cleaned up a little bit. I'm with you, though. I still think there's the physical element and the intimidation factor is part of the game, but I think at that point it was a little bit too far to the left, and we brought it back to the middle where it belongs.